Dr. Richard Sauter joins us as we talk about underground bases and tunnels and my, oh, my, oh, my, what is going on inside of them. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. Tonight, Dr. Richard Sauter joins us. Experienced firsthand contact at a very early age with a variety of paranormal phenomena that have left him a little bit puzzled and thoroughly persuaded that there's much more to Earth and to human perception and consciousness than the mainstream American culture believes. Some of Richard's favorite research and reading interests are underwater bases and tunnels, the electronic mind control, freedom technology, human prehistory, remote antiquity, and kundalini energy with alternative thought patterns. He's back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Richard, how are you?
You know, I'm fine, George. How about yourself?
Good, good, indeed. You know, I am so fascinated with your work with underground bases, and so many other people are as well. How did you get involved in these? I mean, did you stumble into a tunnel or an underground base, or did you get some information? How did this all start?
Yeah, you know, I think it actually started when I was 6 years old when I won a spelling bee at my little country two-room schoolhouse, and the teacher gave me as a prize a book about cave explorers, about spelunking, and it really fired my interest in what was happening underground. So I think I was sort of primed when I moved out to the Midwest many years later as an adult, to the Southwest to do graduate studies. And I heard people talking about alleged underground bases and tunnels where purportedly little gray aliens were working in great secrecy with clandestine elements of the American military. And I didn't know what to think about that. I thought the stories were interesting, but I didn't know if something like that could be true or not. So I just kind of mentally filed it and set it to the side. Later, I had a little time in my academic schedule, and I did some preliminary research, and I discovered, in fact, there are a lot of underground bases and installations run by a variety of different government agencies, both civilian and military, as well as some of the Fortune 500 companies. So I wrote that up in a little article for UFO magazine in L.A., and it appeared in early November of 1992. Well, at that point, I figured I had been there and done that. I had established that, indeed, underground bases did exist, but I didn't know what to say about aliens, so I didn't say anything. And so I figured, okay, that's it. I've exhausted the topic. Well, not quite. Over the holidays of that same year, the week between Christmas and New Year's, the last week of 1992, I was awakened out of a deep sleep one night in the middle of the night by a voice in my ear that said very clearly, just as clearly as I'm speaking to you right now, the underground bases are real. Well, that got my attention right away. And the voice went on to say that not only are they real, but there's an awful lot happening underground, that there are major projects and programs going on, that there are government agencies involved, and a lot of technology. And I got the impression that the scope and the scale of what was happening was very large.
Yeah.
And after 2 or 3 minutes of that, the voice stopped as abruptly as it had begun. And I never had any doubt that I was hearing the voice of a real man. It was a male voice, the voice of an adult male speaking normally accented late 20th century American English. Now, I never thought that I was hearing an angel or an extraterrestrial or a demon or Jesus or God or anything else. I always assumed from the first split second that I was hearing the voice of a real flesh and blood man who was speaking to me using some kind of exotic technology, which I understood, even as experience was transpiring, to have probably been some type of electronic transmitter that targeted the auditory cortex of my brain and or the inner ear. And in fact, subsequently in my research, I discovered there was such a patent given. And it's actually patent number 4,008,000. 858,612 awarded in August of 1989, which details a microwave device for pulsing intelligible sound right into the human ear. So I assume something like that broadcast this message into my inner ear or auditory cortex. And that's how I got started, George. The next day, when I woke up, I decided, you know, well, if this is as real as I was told last night in the middle of the night, there ought to be a paper trail, and I have discovered that paper trail. It exists, and I set it out in my books.
Great. Well, we're going to follow some of this. Now, these underground bases, Richard, are they all over the planet or just primarily in North America? Where are they?
Well, you know, I think they are all over the planet. I deal in my work mostly with North America and, in fact, mostly with the lower 48 states just because I live in the lower 48 states, and so it's easier for me to research, you know, in the area where I live, in the region where I live. But, in fact, my research has identified other underground installations in other countries, China, Russia, England, Israel, Saudi Arabia, many different places, Australia. So it's not just the United States that has constructed these facilities. They exist in many other countries as well. But having said that, there certainly are a great many of them here. And they're, I think, in every state. There are a variety of agencies that have made them.
And how deep are they, Richard?
Well, you know, that's an excellent question. And when I first got started, it's the same one I had. and naturally, it's something everyone wants to know. When I first got started in my research, before I knew much about this, I figured, well, you can just look in a government telephone directory and call up, you know, agencies and ask them about it. Well, I had heard something about FEMA, so I found a government telephone directory and a government documents repository or data collection. And I was going through this directory, and I found FEMA, and I thought, well, here's a list of FEMA telephone numbers. I'll just start calling them and see what I can find out. So there was an 800 number there. I called the number, and a very pleasant woman answered the phone, and we began to chat, and I asked her, say, I hear that FEMA has some underground facilities. Is this true? And she said, yes, it is. And I said, well, what can you tell me about it? And she said, well, I'm talking to you from underground right now.
And you believed her, right? I guess you had to.
Well, it was true. It was true. She told me the facility, and I asked her, well, how far underground are you? And as I recall, she thought maybe she was 30 feet underground, two or three stories down. I know where the facility is that she was working in, and I believe that would probably be accurate. Now, some of the FEMA facilities go a great deal deeper than that. So that's the first part of the answer to your question. They can be in the upper levels comparatively shallow, in some cases only 20 or 30 feet down, but they can extend much deeper than that. And I first began to get clued into that when I went to see a guy whom I'd heard give a public talk on a different topic entirely, as I recall. But during the course of his talk, he made some comments that made me suspect he knew something about underground facilities. So I made an appointment to go see him at his office a week or two later, and went in, and he graciously gave me some time out of his schedule. So I sat down and just point blank started asking him about underground bases, and I asked him about one location in particular, and he said, well, you know, actually, there is an underground facility there. And of course, then I asked him, as you have just asked me, well, how deep is it? And he looked at me and said, without blanking, it's 1 mile.
1 mile deep?
Oh, yeah. So that got my attention. And so I immediately felt like he was pulling my leg, because I assumed that he was just playing me for a fool to see how credulous I was and whether he could put one over on me. But then I perceived that he was very serious and that he certainly had nothing to gain for pulling the wool over my eyes, because no one knew that I was there but him and me.
All right, Richard, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come right back and talk more about these underground bases and also get into what are they trying to do with them and why don't a lot of people talk about them. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie, Dr. Richard Sauter with us as we talk about underground bases and tunnels. Richard, why aren't we getting a lot of people who have been involved in these tunnels? Because I'm sure there have been thousands who have been involved in construction. Why aren't they saying anything?
Well, there's a lot of fear, George. This whole program is surrounded by secrecy. It takes place at a very high level of classification in many instances. People sign very rigorous security oaths. These projects are compartmentalized, and so they just don't talk. But as you observe, indeed there are thousands of people involved. One of my sources told me what I already knew after having told me of some of the work that he's done underground. And in answer to my questions, he said, well, the reality is there are many underground bases and there are thousands of people working in them. Well, I already knew that, but it was glad to have it ratified by an insider, if you will. So, you know, we talk about in popular discourse in this country about how America is a free country, but you know, a lot of people are walking around carrying tremendous fear, under tremendous pressure, not to say what they know, afraid to say what they know. And that's the reality of America. That's the deep split in our consciousness, and we pay a heavy price for that on many levels. I want to say, George, that with regard to the depth of these facilities, I don't know how deep the deepest ones are, but I know from the open literature and documentation that I've seen, it's no problem to go easily 1 mile underground. And I've seen, indications that even 2 miles or 3 miles is within the state of the art, and maybe they can even go deeper than that. I don't know how far material science has advanced in the black world, because I'm not in the black world, but I'm prepared to think that material science in the black world is a lot further along than it is in a technology that we use in our everyday lives. And if that's the case, it could be that they can go many miles underground by this time. But certainly 1 mile, it has been explained to me in very clear terms, is child's play. It's the state of the art to go 1 mile down and make a major facility.
What are the possibilities of what might be going on down there?
Okay. I have often mused about this and asked people about this. And what's come through to me over the years is that, of course, you have command, control, and communication facilities, the so-called CCC facilities. Now, there's some good examples of those. I suppose one of the best would be the FEMA base under Mount Weather in Northern Virginia. That's been there for many years, ever since the 1950s, I believe. It's quite large. It actually amounts to a town underground. Another example of that would be the Cheyenne Mountain facility in Colorado, which has now been partially decommissioned, and part of its function has been moved, I believe, to Peterson Air Force Base. And also in that category would be the underground facility that NATO built at Thunder Bay up in Ontario, Canada. And then there's another example of that for FEMA and open literature, and that would be along Riggs Road between Olney and Laytonsville, Maryland. This is in suburban Maryland. not too far north of Washington, D.C. And there they also have, FEMA has an underground command center. I talked to one guy who'd been in there, and it goes down multiple levels. It's just crammed with electronics and communication gear, as you would imagine.
Sure.
And so you have those types of facilities. Another example of that would be the Site R, so-called Raven Rock, what is sometimes referred to as the alternate Pentagon Command Center. And that is on the border between Maryland and Pennsylvania, between Frederick, Maryland, and Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. And that's a major underground base as well. Now, that's one thing that's going on underground. There's gold storage underground. We've all heard about Fort Knox. Whether there's any gold still there, I don't know, George. But allegedly there was at one time gold stored underground there, and supposedly there still is. Also, at the World Trade Center, before the towers were collapsed in the 9/11 attacks, there was gold stored underground there in vaults. And my understanding is there is gold stored in underground vaults elsewhere in New York and other places around the world, such as London and so forth. Weapons are sometimes stored underground, including nuclear weapons, and or deployed in the case of nuclear missile silos, which are underground. Also, you find scientific research being carried out underground of various kinds. Now, of course, there have been rumors rampant for years of secret biological engineering, genetic engineering, cloning engineering, and technological experimentation taking place underground as a joint venture, more or less, of secretive elements of the United States military and extraterrestrial factions, most notably the Little Gray faction. That story's been out there for a long time, for decades now. I don't know the truth behind it. I don't dismiss it just because it sounds sensational and too melodramatic to be true. I'm presuming that there could be some truth to it. The more I find out, more anecdotal evidence keeps coming up that indicates something like that could be going on. So I don't dismiss those stories out of hand at all. Now, another function is there are a lot of, and when I say a lot, I mean scores, dozens of underground presidential hidey holes or bolt holes or bunkers, whatever you want to call them.
But that's smart business, though, I think.
Well, if you're the president, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
Or there's got to be a place to go to keep government moving, God forbid, if there's an attack.
They're all over the country, and not just for the president, but for others. And they've been there for decades. There are also supercomputing facilities underground. Some of the best known, I guess, would be at Fort Meade in Maryland for the NSA. Others I've heard of in New Mexico underground. There are also so-called arcs or places of refuge that have been built at different places in the event of apocalyptic scenarios that we might imagine, whether natural or man-made, for the preservation, presumably, of a relict human population. And if you don't know about it, then you're not on the list. Who is on the list? Well, clearly it's those who determine that they're worthy. And who determines that they're worthy? Well, if you don't know, you're not worthy in their estimation.
That's true. So some of the power brokers are on that.
The objection I have to this secrecy, George, is that there's no oversight of this. It's all done in the dark, with trillions of dollars being skimmed out of the economy, and there's massive, rampant criminality involved, lying out the wazoo, and it's not constitutional government. It's not consonant with the spirit of the Bill of Rights or of the Declaration of Independence, as far as that goes. What I'm saying is this whole project is fundamentally un-American. We're talking about a shadow government, a secret government, an unconstitutional government, an un-American government. So I would take
With skimmed money,
too. To a certain extent.
With skimmed money as well.
Oh, trillions of dollars. You know, it's interesting. I think you've interviewed Catherine Austin Fitz a number of times.
Sure.
And she's a very bright lady and a very gracious lady. She's also an expert on this matter of the black budget. You know, her background is in high finance, and she held high positions on Wall Street and also had a high position in the government in the first Bush administration. Now, she has documented conclusively that trillions of dollars have been skimmed out of government agencies.
No question.
And that is, well, let's put it this way. In Texas, if you hold up a 7-Eleven and you get a couple hundred dollars, you're liable to do 10 years on a prison farm doing hard labor. In this case, we're talking about trillions of dollars being stolen from all of us. And I don't know if one soul has gone to jail for that.
Jeez. Okay, now let's go through some of these declassified statements and what you might have uncovered in terms of records that you might be able to help provide us with some more information.
I can absolutely tell you that when I began, my first inclination when the voice spoke to me in the night was, there must be documentation, because at that time I was involved in a doctoral program in political science, and I know because of studying government bureaucracies and also corporate bureaucracies that if there's one thing they do, they produce paper, documents, memos, emails, invoices, you name it, paper of every description. The bigger the project, the more people involved, the more money involved, the more paper that will be generated. Plans, everything. So, blueprints, you name it. So I thought, I'll go look through the literature. I'll go look through technical documents, patents. I'll go through archives. I'll read through government reports. I'll just comb through the literature with a fine-tooth comb. And I went through thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of all kinds of documents, reports, books, etc. And I made an interesting discovery along the way, that my intuition was sure. Yes, indeed, these people do produce paper, and a lot of it. And one of the things that I found was a surprising statement by Lloyd Dusha, made in 1987 at an open conference at MIT up in Boston,
right,
having to do with underground excavation, tunneling, and construction. Now, Lloyd Dusha was the deputy secretary at that time of the deputy director of the Army Corps of Engineers. And in his talk to this conference, he said point blank, you know, after World War II, political and economic factors changed, and the underground construction picture changed, and as a result, we had a renewed interest to, in his words, think underground. And we, the Corps of Engineers, became involved in the design and construction of some very complex and interesting military projects. And he went on to say that although the conference program indicates the topic of my talk to be underground facilities for defense, I have to deviate a little because several of the most interesting facilities that have been designed and constructed by the Corps are classified. And then he went on to say that there are other projects of similar scope, which I can't identify, but which included multiple chambers up to 50 feet wide and 100 feet high, using the same excavation procedures mentioned for the NORAD facility, which he also talked about in his conference talk. Now, the Army Corps of Engineers helped make the NORAD facility. And so what he's saying here in plain English is, hey, we've made secret underground bases, and they're pretty damned interesting, large, and complex. But, oh, by the way, I can't really tell you about them. Only, oops, I just did. So you won't find a franker statement on the public record in the open engineering literature than that, that the United States government, in this case the military, has been making secret underground bases. So there's the question right now, many answers to the question that many people have. How can you prove there are secret underground bases?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way. Now, I want to say, again, going to this question of how deep can they be, that I uncovered in one of the archives I looked at a record that included a letter from Dr. Robert W. Vandola, who was, I believe at that time, the director of the U.S. Bureau of Mines. This is 1966. And he was writing to Dr. William McLean, who at that time was technical director for research and development at the China Lake Naval Weapons Station, right in California, and that's still a major R&D facility for the Navy today. But he says, in response to a question that Dr. McLean had obviously posed to him, and talking with some of our mining experts here, I find a consensus that sinking a shaft to 11,000 feet, that's more than 2 miles straight down, George, and driving a shaft horizontally from this presents no severe problems, other than money, perhaps, if the rock is competent and not faulted. So right there he's saying in that first sentence, the consensus in the mining engineering industry is that, yeah, we can sink a shaft 2 miles straight down and then drive a tunnel out from the bottom of that shaft. That would be 2 miles underground. One of the most difficult problems, he continues, in deep mines is a sealing off of aquifers. It would seem that even if the rock were competent throughout the tunnel and drift, there might be rather difficult problems in breaking through to the bottom of the ocean and maintaining a seal against the high water pressure.
Good
and
point.
There he gets down to it, because clearly what Dr. McLean was driving at was making a tunnel out under the seabed and bringing a shaft out onto the sea floor so you could bring personnel and equipment and materiel through an airlock to and from a manned base down on the seafloor. And I say that because that same year of 1966, also coming out of China Lake from a R&D study group or R&D project group that Dr. McLean had set up there, there was another memo that came out entitled The Rock Site Concept. And the abstract for that rock site paper said quite clearly in just two sentences, large undersea installations with a shirt sleeve environment have existed under the continental shelf for many decades. And that's speaking there of commercial industrial mines under the ocean. The technology now exists using off-the-shelf petroleum, mining, submarine, and nuclear equipment to establish permanent manned installations within the seafloor that do not have any air, umbilical, or other connection with the land or water surface, yet maintain a normal one-atmosphere environment within, meaning a shirt-sleeve environment within. And the document goes on to say what it's talking about is tunneling actually hundreds of miles out to sea, under the seafloor, down in the rock in the seabed, and they're making large, permanently manned installations. And I have other documentation showing that these installations would actually be submarine bases. Submarines would come and dock inside, deep underwater.
Like, and there's a connection, some kind of portal where they can go through it, I guess.
Yes. In fact, in some of the illustrations that I've seen that came out of this project back in the mid-1960s at China Lake, that there would be locks, submarine locks, where actual huge ballistic missile firing submarines could go in and out. And if you've ever seen these submarines and know about them, they're quite large vessels. They're hundreds of feet long. And, you talk from the top of the conning tower all the way down to the keel, you may be talking about 100 feet, in some cases maybe more. So they're
very
large
vessels. Richard, we'll talk more when we come back, Coast to Coast AM.